But what if you're talking to someone over your fence and they say to you, you know, I really can't believe that Bible. It's really, I'd like to believe in Jesus. I know I'm a sinner. I know I've done some wrong things, but I really can't believe the Bible because when I watch Nova and I watch National Geographic, the things that my teachers taught me, they've convinced me pretty well that it's wrong on scientific things. And you don't really have a long time to talk with your friend there. You're going to have 5 minutes with your Darwinist exposing the fluff of evolution. How in the world are you going to, in just a few minutes, bring them to a place where they might want to consider the Lord Jesus Christ? Well, we are going to talk about that today without necessarily referring to religious books, Revelation, or faith right off the bat, because they're not ready to listen to that. They're not ready to talk about it because they're convinced that the Bible is wrong. So, if you're taking notes, we'll have a real short outline of the things we're going to cover today. First, we want to focus the discussion because time is very limited. It's 5 minutes with the Darwinist there. We want to work into our vocabulary the phrase less than persuaded. We want to talk about two unobserved important events. We want to briefly touch on a failed mechanism design and then end on a positive note talking about the freedom found in creation science. Now we'll go through all of those again as we go through the talk, so you'll be able to have a chance to take them down. But first thing we want to do today is focus the discussion. Focus the discussion, and the first way we need to do that is to define our terms because time is limited. So get right to the point and define your terms. And the good thing is there are some good, reputable sources out there for defining the terms. And for this discussion, we only need to define two terms, just two terms. The first, since they think evolution has disproved the Bible, we need to define our term evolution. And fortunately, the National Association of Biology Teachers, and you can mention this in your discussion with them, you know, the National Association of Biology Teachers, the largest biological teaching organization in the world, says that the diversity of life on Earth is the outcome of evolution. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about evolution, something that's going to explain the diversity of life on Earth. And that's really important because even just yesterday I was in a discussion with a couple skeptical men, and they want to take the term evolution and they want to define it very, very broadly as simply just change. And of course, everybody observes change. In fact, some of you have changed just since I started talking. You know, I've seen some of you start to get a little grayer and things like that in just that little bit of time. But we really want to pin it down to what the discussion is, and that is the diversity of life on Earth. Did it really all come from a common ancestor? So in my discussion with my evolutionary friend, I might say something like this. Well, you know, the Organization of American Biology Teachers says that the diversity of life on Earth is the outcome of evolution. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about evolution, something that explains the diversity of life on Earth. Straightforward, in one sentence, you really nail it down to the key issues of what we need to talk about. Of course, then I would follow up with this statement right afterwards. You know, extraordinary claims demand some pretty extraordinary evidence. Since they're going to claim that evolution explains everything from birds and bees and trees and people and fleas and all of those kinds of things, I'm going to look for a lot of evidence to back up such an elaborate claim. So those are the first things we need to define is evolution, and the second thing we need to define is science. Science. And we all use this definition of science just since we've been little kids. And I usually say something like this. I hold that science is based on observation and testing. Science is based on observation and testing, and really, who can argue with that? Someone might say, well, observation, testing, and repetition. Okay, I'll throw in repetition. Repetition is another type of testing, and we want our things to be repeatable. So I hold that science is based on observation and testing. And in just a few sentences, you have defined evolution, and you have defined science, and you have really narrowed the focus of the discussion down and you can then proceed. So, we have to have a little quiz here, since this is a didactic lecture, educating people on how to talk with your Darwinian friend in 5 minutes. We need to have a quiz on our terms. So let's have a little competition. We'll divide the room up into two groups. So these two rows are one group, these two sections over here are another group. Is my wife in the audience here today? Please raise your hand. There she is, she's over here. So, since she's on this side of the room will be the smart side. All right, so you guys over here are the smart side. And where's Pastor Payne? Okay, you guys are the dumb side. All right, so we have the smart side and the dumb side over here. All right, smart side. What is your definition of evolution? Evolution is expected to explain the diversity of life on Earth. All right, dumb side. All right, science is, you hold that science is? Right here, up on the screen, there you go. All that, right here for the dumb side. It is based on observation and testing. There we go. So, you have limited the discussion very, very quickly. All right, and then there's support for that because the National Academy of Sciences published a book called Creationism, Science and Creation, the View from the NAS. They say scientific investigators seek to understand natural phenomena and by observation and experimentation. Scientific interpretations of facts and the explanations that account for them therefore must be testable by observation and experimentation. So even the National Academy of Sciences says, observation and testing. All right, we have now focused the discussion. Next, we want to work into our vocabulary this phrase, less than persuaded, less than persuaded. Because we want to avoid an argument. Nobody likes arguments, and we don't want to be wasting our time either. So if we say something like, well, particularly if you were down in Texas, you might say, well, and then there'd be this long pause where you were thinking of the next words to say. Well, I just don't believe in evolution. But then they're going to come back and say, particularly if they're from Seattle, I just don't believe in creation. Right away. And you have reached an impasse. But if you say something like, you know, I am less than persuaded that, it implies a willingness for you to be convinced. It implies an openness of mind, and if you are open in mind and you're willing to be convinced, maybe the person you're talking to will be willing to be convinced, and we want to have an open exchange of ideas. And besides, when you use the word believe, you know, it implies something that's based much more on faith rather than fact. So we want to work out of our vocabulary, I just don't believe in, and we want to work in the phrase, I'm less than persuaded that, or I'm less than persuaded because, and we want to proceed from there. I'm less than persuaded because, and this is really simple and straightforward, evolution is supposed to explain the diversity of life on Earth, therefore evolution is not great diversity with one type of creature. You know, you show me all different types of dogs, but they're still dogs. And evolution is supposed to explain the diversity of life, so therefore it must explain the origin of dogs. You know, evolution talks a lot about changes in the length of finch beaks, but really what I want to know is, what is the origin of finches? Not how did their beaks change, what's the origin of finches? And maybe better yet, what's the origin of the cells that make finch beaks? Where did those cells come from? It talks about changes in the varieties of peppered moths. Of course, now you get the point. What is the origin of the peppered moths? Similarities of body parts. You know, I have the same type of bone in my upper arm, two types of bones in my lower arm, just like a dog does, just like a bat does. And so you point to these similarities as if we have a common ancestor, but what you really need to explain, and I've been listening very carefully, is what is the origin of the bones? And better yet, what's the origin of the information to create a bone and all of the diversity of bones? And of course, we talk a lot about antibiotic resistance. Really, what I'd like to know is, what is the origin of something so complex as a bacterium? You notice I didn't say simple. I said complex. because the so-called simplest bacteria is far more complex than the entire city of Seattle. So we want to say, how do you explain the origin of these things? So I'm less than persuaded because it's supposed to explain the diversity of life on Earth, but this is the principal evidence that I hear all the time on television and all of my teachers present to me. Besides, when I'm watching television these days, evolution relies a lot on stories. They rely a lot on speculation, and more special effects are just dominating the scene in their explanations of evolution. You realize that your children can see a dog-like creature walk right into the water, and right before their very eyes, it can morph into a whale. Wow. A lot of computer graphics and special effects, but this is not real evidence. And I've heard it in the classroom, and I've seen it on television, and that is why I am less than persuaded. I'm also less than persuaded because evolution does not meet my criteria of science, which is based on observation and testing, because all they're doing is conjuring up of stories that they have never seen and can never repeat. Can never repeat. So I am less than persuaded by these things. And you can say it very sincerely. You know, I really do listen carefully to Nova. I did listen carefully to my teachers. And I'm less than persuaded that evolution could ever explain the diversity of life on Earth because all they give me is various varieties and things. So we want to work that phrase into our vocabulary, which brings us to the quiz. To the quiz. Okay, all right, we'll start over here with the dumb side. We want to focus the discussion by defining two terms. Two terms. So, you need to define for me, please. Please define for me science. Science. Science is based on? Observation and testing. All right, smart side. They said that pretty resounding over there, so you have to live up to your name. And you're going to say evolution is supposed to explain? That's right, the diversity of life on Earth. Dumb side, you want to work out of your vocabulary the phrase believe. Well, I just don't believe in. Smart side, you want to pick up the phrase I am because, and then you can go from there. And you're really less than persuaded because of some unobserved important events. The good news is you really only need to remember two. Two unobserved important events. The first one is this: an unobserved natural origin of life. You know, if you're going to explain the diversity of life on Earth, you've got to get it going somehow. And you have to do it naturally without appealing to God. You can't appeal to a deity. But the problem is, no one saw it happen. There's no scientist that's even close to duplicating it. And nobody can adequately explain it. So we need to get the diversity of life on Earth going somehow. We have to do it naturally there. In fact, Scientific American reported just in 2011 of a world-class conference, of the best thinkers on the natural origin of life together, and they reported on the results of that, and you can read the title of that article. Psst, don't tell the creationists, but scientists don't have a clue for the natural origin of life. They don't have a clue. Now, of course, you might be wondering, since we're all in this together and we're really trying to seek truth together, why would they not want to tell the creationists? That's kind of an interesting question. Why wouldn't you want to tell the creationists? But the fact of the matter is this, and you can say this very definitively and confidently to your neighbors. Do you know, my friend, there is not a paper published, a scientific paper published from the best institutions in the best scientific journals anywhere on this planet. None. That definitively, by experimental evidence, documents a natural origin of life. And that is true right up to this minute. There is not a single scientific paper published. So you're less than persuaded because they'd have to explain the origin of life naturally, and there is no scientific paper which could do it. Second, the second reason why you're less than persuaded is because there has never been an observed mechanism to change one creature into a fundamentally different type of creature. So if evolution is going to explain the diversity of life on Earth, they not only have to get it going, they have to be able to change it from one type to another type. They have to be able to change those kinds of things. And that has never been observed. And you can even give a good example. Even bacteria have never been observed to ever change from one type to another type, something other than a bacteria. In fact, you can even make it more definitive. How many of you have ever heard of a strep infection? How many of you have heard of a staph infection? We've all heard of a staph and a strep. In all of observed human recorded history, you've never even seen a staph change into a strep. That is how limited the change is between the creatures. So, just for your information, the world's longest experiment on evolution is the genome experiment going on at the University of Michigan by a guy named Lenski. And the experiment has been going on for over 35 years. And every day they culture these E. coli bacteria, they take out 10% of the culture, destroy 90%, take the 10%, reculture it, and this has been going on every single day through this process for over 35 years. At this point in the experiment, they were up to 40,000 generations. And guess what the E. coli bacteria still was? E. coli bacteria. They reported on this experiment in honor of Charles Darwin, Evolution in Action, a 50,000 generation salute to Charles Darwin, subtitled, The Evolutionary Process Can Be Directly Observed. And this was in honor of his birthday. 50,000 generations, and guess what the E. coli bacteria still was? E. coli. I'm wondering how that was such a great salute to Charles Darwin if evolution is supposed to explain the what? Diversity of life on Earth. Now, this is another cool thing you can say to your friends. Do you know who wants this experiment to continue to go and go until the Lord returns? I do. If this experiment were to go for the next 300 years, I wish it wasn't a taxpayer expense, but nevertheless, I would make a prediction of two things happening. One, that whole population of E. coli is going to crash due to genetic meltdown and the accumulation of mutations. Or two, it's going to be E. coli 300 years from now when they're on their umpteenth million generation. We don't want the processes to stop. We don't want the experiments to end. We would like to see them continue to go. We'd like to continue to go, and every time they hit this wall of the 50,000th generation, or maybe at some time the 50 millionth generation, this bacteria is still going to be E. coli. And every time they hit the wall, it just affirms for us again and again, there is no natural explanation for the origin of life, and there is no real mechanism to change one creature into a fundamentally different type of creature. All right. That brings us to quiz time. Quiz time. First thing we need to do is focus the discussion. We need to focus the discussion by defining two terms. Smart side, over here. You want to define the term for me? Science. Science is? Based on observation and testing. All right, the less than smart side, over here. All right. Evolution is supposed to explain the? That's right. Man, they're trouncing you guys over here. All right. We want to work into our vocabulary when we're talking about this, that when we observe the evidence, we are less than persuaded. We're less than persuaded because of two unobserved but very important events. This side over here. The first unobserved important event is a natural origin of life. Nobody has ever seen it. This side over here. The second thing that has never been observed is a... All right, you sound like you're speaking in tongues. All right. It is a... there has not been an observed what? Natural mechanism to change one creature into a fundamentally different type of creature. And you can say to your friends with absolute confidence, total confidence, there is not a paper, a scientific paper published anywhere on this planet by the best research institutions in the world that has ever observed one creature change into a fundamentally different type of creature, even when scientists are directly damaging them and trying to change them. Never been observed. Wow. Something that is purported to be a fact, an absolute fact, doesn't have a single scientific paper published anywhere to get the two most basic, fundamental features of their theory off the ground, an origin of life and how to change it to one type or another. That's pretty profound, and that's why I'm less than persuaded by the evidence. I'm also less than persuaded because they offer up a failed mechanism for, as you see there, design. Failed mechanism for design. Now this is the good part that we have as creationists. Everybody sees the design. All scientists agree that life shows high complexity. They all say it looks like it's designed. As a creationist, I would say it looks like it's designed because it really was designed. It really was designed. There was a real designer behind it. The evolutionists say, well, it looks like it's designed, but that's the point. It only looks like it was designed, but really wasn't. Life only appears like it's designed, but wasn't. There was no real designer, and so what you see when you look at your hand, which looks like it's designed, is only the illusion of design. When you look at your hand, you're being duped because you think there was a designer who put this thing together. In fact, they would say this is the real mechanism for design. They would say that we see the design, and Richard Lewontin, who's a famous geneticist at Harvard University, said it was the marvelous fit of organisms to the environment, much more than the great diversity of forms, that was the chief evidence of a supreme designer. Now, this man's an atheist, but he certainly understands the arguments. Darwin realized that if a naturalistic theory of evolution was to be successful, it would have to explain the apparent perfection of organisms and not simply their variation. Now, when Richard Lewontin says apparent, he really means apparent. It only appears like it's designed, but really wasn't. So, move on to the next slide here. They would say that this is the real explanation for design in nature. Evolutionary process is it. And evolution, of course, is mutations, which are changes in your genetic information, and that would be coupled to natural selection. Now, this is pretty easy to shoot down. This is pretty easy to refute, because mutations, even the word sounds kind of disgusting. You know, you're a mutant. When you're a kid, particularly little boys, they might come up to another person and say, "You mutoid," or something like that. You know, nobody wants to be a mutoid on things. Because we know that mutations cause disease. We know that mutations cause cancer. We know, and probably will know someday, that probably every single disease known to mankind can be traced back to some type of genetic mutation or breakdown at the beginning. So now you want me to believe that the diversity of life on Earth is a result of genetic mutations, which destroys information, which leads to disease and death? You want me to believe that maybe, just possibly, hopefully, somehow, somewhere, one of those was useful and was selected by nature? Nature is selecting? Well, please show me the selector. Show me the selector. If you hold the natural selection. You know, when someone comes up to you and they say, well, nature just favored this, or nature acted on that, or nature selected for this one, or nature selected against one, just sit there and kind of say, that's interesting. I didn't know nature could think. Please show me the selector. Well, they'll say, well, you know, that's just a metaphor. You know, nature really doesn't think. Nature really doesn't do that. And then you would say, well, then nature really doesn't design. Nature really doesn't design things. So you want me to believe that mutations which cause disease and cancer is your building blocks, and you want me to believe that blind, thoughtless nature consistently selected for the best thing all the time? I'm less than persuaded by that evidence. I am much less than persuaded by that evidence. In fact, I think there is a better explanation for design. You know, when I look at my hand up here, this is a key thing you want to write down. I see features of complexity, and it's very simple. I see numerous parts acting together for a purpose. Numerous parts acting together for a purpose, of which there is information behind it. And in all of human experience, the origins of information and the origins of numerous parts acting together for a purpose has always been intelligence. It has always been intelligence. So why should I believe that this was not the result of intelligence? And you know what? Numerous parts acting together for a purpose is verifiable. Everybody can see it with their own eyes. And information is verifiable. So, you can say something that creation offers a more rational explanation, not relying on information-damaging mutations, and not appealing to something as nebulous as Mother Nature when you say natural selection. So, when I put those two mechanisms together in a head-to-head test, I am persuaded that real design based on the real features of design offers a more rational explanation. A more rational explanation. I am persuaded by that evidence, and I am less than persuaded by the alternative. So, now, that brings us then to the last point, but also our last quiz time. So this is your last opportunity to really shine. So let's start over here with this side. We want to focus the discussion very, very quickly. We want to define just two terms. The first thing we want to define is evolution. We don't want them dancing all over the field by saying, well, evolution is change, or maybe evolution is just a change in genetic frequency, or things like that. We want to get right to the point, and we're going to say, you know, the National Association of Biology Teachers says evolution is to explain the... That's right, the diversity of life on Earth. And when I'm talking about science, I'm talking about something that is based on
observation
and testing. That's right. And you know, I'm less than persuaded by the things that have been taught to me in school, because there are two really important unobserved events. The first thing, if evolution were to be true, is that life must get going. And the first unobserved important event is a what? That's right, exactly. A natural, now that's the key word, natural, meaning no God. A natural explanation for the origin of life, And if once it gets going, if evolution is true, it has to be able to change. And there has never been observed what? A natural mechanism to change what? One creature into a fundamentally different type of creature. Wow. And also, I'm less than persuaded because evolution offers a failed mechanism for design. According to their mechanism of design, design is based on the first process, the first element are genetic mutations, which supposedly are guided by natural selection. And when someone says to you, selection favored, selection acted on, selection weeded out, selection blah, 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 you could just say, show me the selector. And there is no selector. All right. Wow. We've quickly narrowed the discussion down. We've focused it very quickly. We're not in an argument. We're just laying out the reasons why we're less than persuaded by that. And now we want to end the discussion on a really positive note. Positive note. I like some of the freedoms that are found in creation science. Now this would be worth the entire price of admission because very, very rarely does anybody ever discuss what are the good things that we find in creation science. What are some of the good things here? Well, as a creationist, number one, I'd like to detail a few of those positive aspects of creation science to you, of which the first is the freedom to follow the evidence wherever it leads, which allows researchers to never stop questioning or discovering. You know, the people on this planet who are most interested in research continuing are creationists. I am not worried for one minute, not worried that scientific procedures properly followed are ever, ever going to find any evidence that's going to overturn the fact that things were supernaturally designed. I'm willing to listen to natural explanations. I really want to look at the data, but I want to follow it wherever it leads, which leads me to continue to discover and to question, which is unlike Scott Todd from Kansas said, which was published in Nature a few years ago, even if all the data point to an intelligent designer, such a hypothesis is excluded from science because it is not naturalistic. Wow. Even if all the data point to it, you're going to reject it? It's going to be excluded? How would you like, since I'm an engineer, how would you like your fellow engineers to practice like that? What would you do if I said, you know, even if all the data point, the fact that the beams may not be strong enough to hold this roof up with a foot of snow on it, I'm going to put them in anyway. How would you like if, as your medical doctor, I were to say, you know, even if all your symptoms, all your signs, all your physical exam evidence, all your laboratory studies, all the x-rays and other imaging I ever did to you, even if they all point to disease A, clearly pointing to disease A, I think you've got disease B. You know, you would find that quite silly, because in no other area of science do we tolerate counterintuitive and mystifying explanations like they do in the world of evolutionism. And that's why Scott Todd can say that. Or another man, Adam Rutherford, commenting on a researcher from Iowa State University. His name was Guillermo Gonzalez. He was an astronomer. He published a lot of papers. He was denied tenure because he believes there was a designer behind the universe. Denied tenure because of that. And this is what this person said about him, saying whether in 4004 BC, that's basically my position, or 13 billion years ago that, quote, God made it, is not falsifiable and therefore not science. I know that were I in a position to offer Guillermo Gonzalez tenure, I would deny it for the precise reason that his, yes, religious views about purpose in the universe explicitly mean he is a doo-doo scientist regardless of his ability to generate valid data. Wow. Is that open-minded? Is that following the evidence wherever it leads? Well, as a creation scientist, I like the ability to follow the evidence wherever it leads. The second freedom that I really enjoy is the freedom from magic words. Oh, you want to work these into your vocabulary. Words that you hear pouring from shows like Nova and National Geographic and Discovery, and you find them just flooding the pages of the best scientific journals in the world when they talk about evolution. Words like arose, emerged, appeared, gave rise to, a miracle of evolution, or my favorite, burst onto the scene. You know, burst onto the scene. Oh, we need to train our children to listen for these words. I wish we had one of those little clicker things that you had, they were called a cricket when you were a kid. You could pass those out to your kids, and as they listen to Discovery, let them click that every time one of these words come up. Arose, emerged, gave rise to, burst onto the scene. They're everywhere. You know, real scientists don't explain phenomena by appealing to these words. How'd you like it if I was your medical doctor and I said, I'd really like you to take this medication. I think it'll really help you. It burst onto the scene yesterday. You know? There it is. And so please put this in your body and take that. You know, I like the freedom from having to appeal to these kinds of words just to get my story to fit together and kind of sound believable. So, I like that. Look at this quote by Stuart Kaufman. He's an evolutionist. Just read it with me for a second. 4 billion years ago, some congeries of molecules danced, blindly catalyzing one another's formation, reaching a critical diversity at which self-sustaining webs of reactions emerged and formed life. Blind interactions gave rise to the emergent phenomenon of cellular life, cells linked in metabolic exchanges, blindly creating the first ecosystems. Those ecosystems have unfolded for over billions of years with a profusion of species emerging and passing into extinction. And at each level, we sense emergent lawfulness in the profusion. Wow. You know, I know he was a hippie from the 60s, but maybe he just toked a little too much on these things, on that. It's all linked together by magic words there. Third, I like the freedom from the self-delusion that researchers must conclude that intricate designs are only an illusion, such as what Richard Dawkins says. Biology is the study of complicated things that have the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. Or as Francis Crick, co-discoverer of DNA, says, biologists must constantly keep in mind that what they see was not designed, but rather evolved. They have to constantly keep this in mind. You know, they want to say that it's the creationists who are just blindly following a set of a worldview without consideration for the facts. But in the reality, it's the evolutionists who are saying, I believe, I believe, I believe. And their fellow evolutionist says, you don't believe enough. And they smack them around a little bit more until they believe fully. They are the ones who must constantly keep in mind that what they see as they look through their microscope, staring them in the eyes, which is shouting, design, really isn't designed. And you know what? Your friends and your neighbors next door are not going to really be blinded like that. The Bible says that the things that the Lord has made in Romans chapter 1 are clearly seen. Clearly seen. So even if that skeptic is saying, I don't see it, you can be assured that the Holy Spirit is prompting him in their mind and in their heart. They see it. They see it. And that is your ace in the hole, because you know deep down inside, when they see this hand, they see it's designed. They see that design. So, I like the freedom from not having to constantly blind myself. I like the freedom from the blinding and smothering presupposition that expects regular mistakes and errors due to millions of years of evolution. You know, that was really a hindrance to science. Because just in the medical field, for years and years, tonsils were taken out because they were thought to be a useless vestigial organ. Appendices were routinely removed because they thought they were a vestigial organ. DNA, which didn't readily appear to have a function right at first because it didn't code for proteins, was called junk and evolutionary leftovers. And all of these mistakes, based on this terrible presupposition, held back science because they thought they were a result of evolutionary mistakes over millions and millions of years. I like the freedom of not having to be bound by that evolutionary presupposition. Number six, I like the freedom to expect that nature is the product of a rational, coherent design, which is the key to freeing science up from the thought prison of evolutionism and once again opening up science to new insights and discoveries. You know, they have it totally backwards. They think because I'm a creationist and I see this hand and I say, God make it, God made it, that's the end of the discussion. That's the end of the research. Wrong. Totally wrong. In fact, when I see this hand here, certainly I believe it shows all the evidences of design. I see this, but I want to know what makes it function. I want to know what those tendons are made of. I want to know how they work. I want to know their elastic properties. I want to know what makes up the fibers that make those elastic properties. I want to know about the muscles. I want to know about the cells that make up the muscles. I want to know about the components of the cells that make up the muscles. I want to know about all of this. And once I have found out everything I know, you know what I believe? There's more to find out that I don't know. And we will never, ever hit bottom. Because this creation, just like God and His Word, are infallible, and you will never completely find them out. And we, as human beings, can enter into a never-ending, joyous task of discovery. And everything we open up about the Lord is like unwrapping a new present every single day of finding something that He made, and it honors Him all the more. It doesn't stop inquiry, it encourages us to continue to do research. And finally, I like the freedom from many religious conclusions masquerading as science made by evolutionists. Religious conclusions masquerading as science, such as this, by Carl Sagan, author of this famous book called Cosmos. The cosmos is all that is, ever was, or ever will be. Now that sounds kind of scientific, but it really is a religious statement. It's a religious statement of what Sagan would like to believe about the world. But if Sagan were still alive, I would say to him very respectfully, Dr. Sagan, what experiment did you do, and what paper did you publish it in that showed that the cosmos is all it is, ever was, or ever will be? That had to be one big experiment. And what did you use for a control? You see, he couldn't do an experiment like that. And just by asking him those things, you can point out that these are clearly religious statements. Second, Michael Shermer said this in Scientific American, in one of the most existentially penetrating statements ever made by a scientist, Richard Dawkins concluded that the universe, quote, we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is a bottom. No design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. Now that's a religious statement. Dr. Dawkins, what experiment did you do and what paper did you publish it in which you show that the universe has no good, no evil, no purpose? I mean, how did you ever frame that experiment, Dr. Dawkins, to show that there was no purpose for the universe? Don't you think that's a little presumptuous, Dr. Dawkins? Those are religious statements that are masquerading as science. Stephen Hawking, regarded as one of the brilliant, most brilliant men on the planet, says there is no need of heaven. He just published this at the end of 2011, and this is what he said. Stephen Hawking, the world-renowned theoretical physicist, finds no room for heaven in his vision of the cosmos. The 69-year-old says, quote, "There is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. That's a fairy tale for people afraid of the dark." Well, even as smart as he is, and I'm sure he's much smarter than me, I might say, well, Dr. Hawking, what experiment did you do to show that there was no heaven and no afterlife? Did you prove that by observation and testing and repetition? This is a religious statement. And that's why evolution is tied so tight to religious statements all the time. Lawrence Krauss, theoretical physicist at the University of Arizona, says this. This is a great quote. "Every atom, the amazing thing is that every atom in your body came from a star that exploded. And the atoms in your left hand probably came from a different star than the right hand. It is really the most poetic thing I know about physics. You are all stardust. You couldn't be here if stars hadn't exploded, because the elements, the carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, iron, and all the things that matter for evolution were created in the nuclear furnaces of stars. And the only way they could get into your body is if those stars were kind enough to explode. So forget Jesus. The stars died that you could be here today." You don't think there is a strong metaphysical tie between the promotion of evolutionary thinking, whether it's cosmic evolution or organic evolution, and religious thinking? You're not listening closely to what the scientists are saying. Those two things are inextricably linked. And so often they have religious statements that are masquerading as science. Even as this last one says by Jeremy Rifkin, "We no longer feel ourselves to be guests in someone else's home, someone else's God, in God's home, and therefore obliged to make our behavior conform to a set of pre-existing cosmic rules, namely the Bible. It is our creation now. We make the rules. We establish the parameters of reality. We create the world, and because we do, we no longer feel beholden to outside forces. We no longer have to justify our behavior, for we are now the architects of the universe. We are responsible to nothing outside ourselves, for we are the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever." Wow. You know, that doesn't just border on blasphemy. That is blasphemy. And this is nothing more than a religious statement wrapped up in the garb of science. And I like the freedom from not being bound in those things. So if you had 5 minutes to talk with your neighbor over the fence, and they're saying, you know, I really would like to believe, but I can't really believe the Bible because evolution seems to have proved it wrong, you can say, you know, That's a legitimate response, because it seems like it's such a fact. But I haven't come to the same conclusion, and you know, I'd like to tell you why. First of all, when I'm talking about evolution, I agree with the National Academy of Sciences, and I agree with the National Association of Biology Teachers, which says that evolution is supposed to explain the diversity of life on Earth. Now, that's a pretty big claim, and I'm looking for some pretty important and pretty powerful evidence to back it up. And that evidence has to be in the form of science. And so when I'm talking about science, I'm talking about things that are based on observation and testing and repetition, which is what makes science so different from other fields of study. We can test it and we can repeat it. And I really did listen carefully to my teachers in high school. I listened carefully to my teachers in college. I watch all of the shows about evolution on television, and I listen carefully to them too. I'm less than persuaded that evolutionary processes can explain the diversity of life on Earth. Because something that's supposed to explain the diversity of life on Earth, all they ever give me are the diversities of different types of dogs, or the diversities of finch beaks. That's not explaining the diversity of life on Earth. I'm less than persuaded because if evolution is supposed to explain the diversity of life on Earth, it has to get life going. And do you know there's not a paper published anywhere on this planet which definitively documents by scientific experimental evidence a natural origin of life? And there's not a paper published anywhere which has ever documented one creature changing into a fundamentally different type of creatures. And so I'm less than persuaded because these most basic elements of evolution have never even been documented. I'm less than persuaded because they tell me that the diversity of life on Earth is due to random genetic mutations. I mean, mistakes in my DNA which cause disease and cancer. And they say it's guided by natural selection, something which is as mystical as saying Mother Nature. I'm less than persuaded because I don't like mystical explanations. And in fact, when I really look at my hand, I see all the evidences of design here. I see lots of numerous parts functioning together for a purpose, which are based on a lot of information, which have always had an intelligent source for them. So when I put those two mechanisms head to head, the designer seems to win, and that is persuasive evidence for me. And you know what? Another thing I like about thinking there's an intelligent designer, there's a creator behind me, is I like the freedoms that it allows me to have as a scientist. I like the freedom to follow the evidence wherever it leads. I like the freedom to not be bound by magical words like arose, emerged, gave rise to, or burst onto the scene, which evolutionists always seem to use to tie their story together. I like the freedom to continue to study the creation and know about the creator. And that's why I'm less than persuaded that evolution explains the diversity of life, and I hope you're less than persuaded that it can explain the diversity of life on Earth. And I thank you for listening for these few minutes, but if you just have another couple minutes, I'd like to tell you about the one who does explain the diversity of life on Earth. I'd like to tell you about that creator who also became your savior and really did something for your sins and my sins. And that creator's name is the Lord Jesus Christ. Would you like to know him today? And in just those few minutes, you may be able to take a doubter or a skeptic and lead them from a position of doubt to where they may be open to listen about the Lord Jesus Christ. And that'll be probably the best 5 minutes you'll have spent in your entire day. Thank you so much for your time. I'll turn it back over to you.